Hello and welcome to another episode of the Dot Ball podcast, where we focus on South African cricket. It's mostly Proteas at the moment, but the good news is that the domestic season will be starting this weekend, in fact. So once that gets up and running, we'll be paying a lot of attention to domestic cricket as well, because I say we because we're joined by former Proteas Paul Harris and John Kent, and we also have the doyen of cricket statisticians with us in Andrew Sampson. Welcome to you all, and we all love domestic cricket as well. We are great supporters of the local game as well. It's obviously been a good little period for the Proteas, finishing with a 3-0 whitewash of Sri Lanka in Colombo. And, you know, I'll be honest, going into the series, I expected Sri Lanka to win. So I think 3-0 is a very, very good result indeed. Paul Harris, your thoughts on that series?
Yeah, a good one. I thought the huge positive out of it was how Keshav Maharaj led the team. Probably not a quinky dink when you've got so many spinners in the team that he would probably bowl them quite well. But, great for, obviously for him personally and for a washed out spinner to see someone, leading our team that bowls spin and us picking so many spinners and effectively them winning the series for us. So it's great to see. Let's hope and pray very hard that the conditions when we are in the World Cup suit spin. Because if they do, well, anything can happen.
Yeah, John Kent, you obviously know Keshav Maharaj well, coming from KwaZulu-Natal, Durban. And he's got a really good cricket head on his shoulders, doesn't he? And a natural leader, would you say? I mean, is he someone that the Proteas can look to now, possibly in all formats? As a captain, we do obviously have Dean Elgar and Themba Bavuma in the permanent positions at the moment.
Yeah, I think if Bavuma was fully fit, etc., as a captain, I think they're a bit worried about without Bavuma's leadership, they're going to have someone like Maharaj, who's had some great experience and won trophies with the Dolphins the last few seasons, and he's been a very good captain, and his performances have just kept getting better and better in all the formats, as you've said. And that T20 tournament bubble they had, the 50-over one, obviously wasn't around, but the T20 bubble that was played in Durban, those conditions suited them perfectly. And like Paul says, basically that, if the conditions do allow us, and we've got such a spin-heavy, contingent at the moment, it'll shoot us down to the ground. Obviously, it's nice to see Markram. I'm really excited about what he's been doing at three. Reza's been included in the squad. Obviously, guys like Milan not quite making that squad for some reason. I'm not quite sure what happened there. With his record in ODI cricket right now, it's quite hard to understand that move. But we carry on. And then there's a few other areas where, I saw a bit of an outcry online about, guys like the Fuffs and the Morrises and et cetera and et cetera. And it just didn't really roll out very well, I think, for the sort of selection panel, or how they dealt with those guys. Because Tahir, I've left out him as well, sorry. And, those sort of guys are, They're big players wherever they play. It's just a little bit disappointing. It seems like the communication wasn't ideal. But also, obviously another spanner with Themba getting injured now. Is he going to be ready for the World Cup? If he is, he wouldn't have played any games at that time. So, yeah, they're in a little bit of a quandary in that sense, I guess. It all depends on what Bavuma's fitness is going to be like going into that tournament.
Guys, before we chat about the World Cup squad, and there obviously are some issues there to discuss, let's first of all talk about the sort of style of play, the balance of the South African team that we saw in Sri Lanka, and whether that's going to be a good way forward for the World Cup. And I think we all agree a spin-heavy attack, fantastic. But that does come with consequences. And one of them seems to be that we're only fielding five specialist batsmen. Can that work at the World Cup, Paul?
Sure, it's a tough one. You know, you want six specialist batsmen generally with your all-rounder at seven. I mean, that's the ideal sort of the lineup. The problem is I don't think we've really had an all-rounder that's really stuck his hand up with the bat. You know, there's been a couple of guys every now and then with the ball. You know, George Linder, I thought, was incredibly, I don't even know if it was unlucky, you know, forces at play. But, you know, the point is the guy, poor guy's played, I mean, he's been a good trick. And, he's been playing every single team, doing really well with the ball. The cup squad comes out to me, and a guy that hasn't been playing all of a sudden jumps the queue and plays ahead of him. I mean, it's, you know, it's not a good look. But, bigger than me. He's a spin-heavy group of guys. And in order to play that lineup, I think you've got to, you know, sacrifice the batter. Is it risky? It certainly is. You know, is it a balance that can win you a World Cup? I don't think so. I think at some stage you're going to need someone down the order to play a serious knock. Would I have liked a bit more experience in the batting lineup? Sure. But you know, T20 cricket's a very odd game. If by hook or by crook we can get through to a knockout game, I wouldn't think there'd many guys with our spin bowling and our fast bowling lineup that would want to face us. I think that there's just that one sort of question mark of would there be an all-rounder somewhere that could come into that team and fill the gap.
John, are you happy with the balance the way it has been lately in the Proteas?
I think I'm still a little bit worried about our seamers, obviously our frontline seamers, talking about Rabada and Ngidi, Nokia. So I'm a little bit worried about, you know, obviously they haven't bowled that much in the series with all the spinners having a bowl. When they did bowl, they went at a quite a high rate, which is quite worrying because, you know, the conditions aren't going to get any easier for the bowlers at you know, in the UAE and surrounds. So that's going to be a tough one. I think the interesting call was obviously having a Milder Pretorius combination. You could say they're both similar players. You know, that's where the Linder maybe chat would come in, where he's obviously a spinning all-rounder, not a seeming all-rounder. Naturally, obviously, Fortein, Maharaj, they don't offer as much with a bat as obviously a Linder. But saying that, obviously, if the guy's bowling beautifully, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But I think that the balance, it's going to be interesting how they shape up Reza, Quinny. We know Quinny. If Quinny, Markram batting one and batting three, if they have a really good World Cup, I think it's going to be, takes a lot of pressure off a lot of other guys. Guys like Van der Dusens, Millers, Clarksons, those type of players in that middle order. I think if they come off, we you know, it'll give us a great start.
Yeah, and Andrew, do you have any thoughts on the World Cup squad? Any surprises or shock omissions for you?
Not really, although as we've been saying, I think George Linder was unlucky to miss out. But pretty much as expected, other than that, I would think. It's going to be, obviously, the World Cup for spinners, so we've pretty much got that base covered, I think, fairly well at the moment.
Yeah, I must say, guys, that the George Linder omission is the one that really actually made me angry, because I don't feel it's the way players should be treated. George Linder, I think, played in 14 of the last 16 T20s or something like that. Did his job very well. Sure, we would have liked to have seen a few more runs from him, but in terms of bowling, he had an economy rate of just over 7. He took, you know, an average of at least a wicket a game. So did a great game, a great job. And then suddenly, having not really done anything wrong, he's out of the squad for a guy who's hardly played. And, I mean, I rate Bjorn Fortein. I think he's also a very good bowler, and he showed in the last three games in Sri Lanka that he's a quality performer. But, Paul, just in terms of the way players are treated and the message that sort of gives to players, as a former player yourself, what did you make of Linder's treatment?
Look, it is what it is, right? I mean, at the end of the day, the sort of makeup of the squad wasn't there. I mean, we know we all live in South Africa. We're not stupid. We know what sort of targets have to be in place. And I'm not saying for one second that Fortein is a sort of target player or a quota player. Any stretch of the imagination, he's a very good cricketer. But it reeks of that. I mean, you know, if we can't speak about it, then, you know, what's the point of having it? And, you know, they obviously got to a stage in that squad where there weren't sort of enough numbers. They did the maths. You know, if Linda is honest with himself, he'll probably say he hasn't been as good as he could have been with the bat. If he had been, then it might not have been a direct competition with the ball, with the tape. And the powers that be decided that they needed to include Putain. And I think it was the sort of the makeup of that squad. I can't see any other reason for it. It wasn't a cricketing reason. And if, you know, if we can't all sit around a table and be honest and talk about it, and everyone be scared about the sort of elephant in the room, then we, you know, we won't get to the right answer. So that is the reason for it. Is that, in my opinion, I mean, someone else can correct me if they think I'm wrong, is that we need to make up a sort of more of the color scenario in our makeup of our squad. And that's why Linda was left out.
Well, it would seem that the magic number is 7, because for the last decade or so, South Africa have never gone to a World Cup with less than 7 players of color. Even if that was the case, though, John Kent, I still think the selectors made a mistake, because with those constraints, I would have still chosen George Linda and probably ahead of Vian Mulder, because to me, Mulder and Pretorius, you've touched on it. To me, they are the same cricketer. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it is. You could have maybe gone with Linda and one of those two, like you just mentioned now. That probably gives you a couple more options, you know, because obviously we've got those big quicks up our sleeve, and then you got those two semi-all-rounders. You could probably would have done with one. Pekla Kwayo is a reserve player, as Linda is at the moment. And, I just if you go straight with the spin bowling element, if you go to the stats, Linda's out-bowled them all, to be honest, other than Shamsi. Obviously, we know he's number one in the world. But that's where, like you're saying, Keith, people have noticed this and they've got quite angry about this. And obviously the treatment of players, you know, like, is this what we do to, you know, some of the best players in the country? You know what I mean? It is a bit of a sad situation.
Well, perhaps in 15 years' time, there'll be another SJN and George Linda can go and complain then. But just moving to the World Cup itself, and I must say, winning 3 T20 series in a row now has built my confidence a bit, and I think it's possible for the Proteas to make the semi-finals. I believe that they can beat Australia, England in those conditions. We've shown that we can beat the West Indies in kind of subcontinental conditions as well. And Sri Lanka are probably going to be the other team in the Proteas group. So cause for optimism, Paul, that the Proteas could make the semi-finals?
Oh, certainly. Look, I think that the Proteas have got this. I've got the bowling attack for all conditions. I honestly believe that. You know, we've got the wrist spin. You know, you've got the left arm spin. You've got pace. You know, you've got experience. So I think in the bowling front, we've got all our bases covered. The question mark around this Proteas team is, can the top 5, let's put a question mark, top 6, get enough runs for that bowling unit to win us games? I think that's the key to the World Cup success. If we get, you know, 3 key batters doing really well, I think one of our batsmen have to be man in the series. You know, Quinton de Kock or a David Miller or a Markram, which I'm going to go through the top 5. Either of them, you know, need to have an absolute blinder of a tournament and give us a lot of runs. If not, I mean, I think 2 or 3 of them have got to have a blinder of a tournament of those top batters. Because as I said, I think our bowling unit is world class. We cover most areas. We have the world's number one bowler floating around in there. He tends to get 2 or 3 every single game. And if we can get sort of the, I don't think we need to, with that bowling lineup, get the 170s and 180s. I think if we can get the 150s and 160s, we've got a real chance.
John, Australia and England, having watched what South Africa have done lately, surely they're going to be a little bit nervous about playing us in the United Arab Emirates?
Yeah, I think those Aussies, they're up for the picking, to be honest. I don't think they've played brilliant cricket. They've come off a poor series against Bangladesh. They got bowled out for some very low totals there. And obviously England, we know they got quite a bit of depth and some dangerous match winners up their sleeves. So I think the England game will be the biggest game. Obviously, we want to get off to a great start and try and get one over the Aussies early on. That'll give us a great confidence booster in this. You know, we can't hang around and have a few games, try and feel your way into it. We need to really start well and beat Australia and beat them well, I think, and that will give us the confidence to hopefully give England a good one as well.
John, you've commentated in leagues around the world, and obviously you follow these various T20 leagues. Just touching on the Faf du Plessis, Imran Tahir, Chris Morris, these guys, O'Reilly, Rousseau, I guess, guys who haven't been chosen. One of the reasons that, I mean, I think maybe is overlooked a bit is that, sure, people are seeing their great performances in these leagues, but the standard of those leagues, how is it below international level? I mean, for me, those are franchise competitions, so it's a step below international level. Even the IPL is a little bit below.
Yeah, I think in those teams, there are going to be those international stars that you've got to face up against. But then, like you say, they go through the different ranges where there'll be franchise domestic players. Then there'll be a band of players that are young up-and-comings. So, yeah, you know, you can find your way and put in some really good performances in these leagues. I think maybe the difference of, like, we see the guys performing around the world, like Tahir, Morris, Faf, those sort of guys. But in the last year and a half, they've been fully available for these tournaments, I suppose. You know, a lot of the, you know, Rabadas, Norkias, even Van der Dussen, to a lesser extent, and them in the last sort of year and a half, they don't really get always the opportunity to play in these tournaments because they're on international tours, et cetera, et cetera. But, I still think, you know, these conversations should and could have happened, over this last year. It just sounds like they couldn't really, either they didn't have those chats where they couldn't agree on terms for these players in this big tournament coming up, which, yeah, obviously is quite, you know, disappointing.
Paul, you have a lot of experience of team dynamics and that sort of thing. How difficult is it for a player, both for the player himself and for the team, to kind of come in from the cold into a team when you haven't been part of it for most of the year, and then go into a World Cup?
Look, I don't read too much into that in the professional era. I think it's more about game time. I think the issue would be if none of those guys have played any cricket, which is not the case. Faf du Plessis has played quite a bit of cricket, although he did miss a bit because he was concussed. But he's come straight back from his concussion and scored a heap of runs. And he got a big 100 the other day, and then another 85, to help his team, you know, do very well. So, I mean, I would have given it my best to get those guys in the side. We can point fingers at the management. We can point fingers at the players. I would imagine the truth is somewhere in the middle. Between those two, I really don't think, well, I know because I've asked, is that Bachi and Smithy wouldn't have not got try to get hold of them. They have. I just think that there just wasn't a way of getting everyone to agree to certain things. And those guys aren't playing. We've got to come to terms with it, rightly or wrongly. They're not playing. We've got the squad that are going over. Is it a squad that can win? Probably not. But is it a squad that can certainly compete? And if they get a bit of luck and a couple of their senior players really, really do well, then who knows? I mean, we've had teams that have been sort of the favorites by miles before going into World Cups and haven't won. So who says that a team that is, certainly not a favorite can't go in and surprise a whole lot of people? There's some world-class players there. Just because all the IPL teams aren't rushing over, most of our players doesn't make them not good players. Quinton de Kock could win you a World Cup by himself. So, I'm still positive. I think that we could surprise a few teams, but are we a winning side? I doubt it.
Okay, well, speaking of Proteas stalwarts and individual match winners, some sad news recently. The retirement of Dale Steyn from all formats of the game. And Andrew, obviously, Dale Steyn has incredible numbers across the board, but I believe you've just picked out a few that are pretty unique to him and really illustrate the greatness of the man.
Well, I'm not sure that one of them illustrates the greatness of him, although obviously he was one of the all-time great fast bowlers across the world. But that one would be a more fun stat, which is my favorite Dale Steyn stat, is his batting record in Boxing Day tests. He played 10 test matches that started on Boxing Day and scored 400 runs at an average of 33.33 in those. which is quite a lot higher than his normal average, and that included both his 50s and his three next best scores. So five of his top five scores were all made in Boxing Day tests. And, well, just on the side, he also happens to be the leading wicket taker in Boxing Day tests worldwide. He's got 49 wickets in those 10 tests at 24.59, just ahead of Shane Warne, who got 47 Boxing Day test wickets.
He's like Father Christmas. I mean, he always delivers on board a day after Christmas.
Well, there you go. I mean, he obviously enjoys his Christmas lunches or whatever it is that keeps him going on the Boxing Days. But perhaps a more illustrative stat is that he is the leading wicket taker amongst fast bowlers, visiting fast bowlers in Asia. Obviously, Asia is generally a more spin-friendly environment, and so a lot of seamers have struggled there. But in 22 tests in Asia, he took 92 wickets at 24.11, a comfortable lead over Courtney Walsh, who's the second highest on that list, with 77 wickets.
Yeah, I think that subcontinent record is what pretty much clinches it for me, that the greatest fast bowler of this era, and certainly one of the greatest of all time. And I was very privileged to be in Nagpur in 2010, I think it was, when quite the most incredible display of reverse swing bowling by Dale Steyn. Paul Harris, I think you were there as well. Boxing Day batting, I seem to remember Dale's epic innings in Melbourne. Did you come in before Dale? I think you took a few blows on the body and kind of paved the way for Dale.
Yeah, I think I took the shine off the ball for Dale. I think myself and JB put on 100 and then they put on 250, I think it was. So the tail did wag, but, you know, Dale Steyn, that particular test was my favorite, actually. I know you mentioned Nagpur, which was amazing, but we got the ball changed and that ball reversed. And Stanky, you know, it was like with the reversing ball. But that particular test match in Melbourne, you got 10 in the gap. And I can assure you guys that wicket was like the N1. It was a road. It really wasn't a lot in it for the seamers, and he was the difference. So, you know, by far the best bowler I've ever seen for me personally. I didn't get to see any of the sort of older Oaks live, but certainly Dale Steyn, for me, the best bowler I've ever seen in my life. You know, I had the ability to crack a game open, you know, from nowhere to win you a game. He must have been, well, he certainly was a captain's dream. And more importantly for me, the kind of guy he was off the field. Fortunate that I played all my cricket with Dale Steyn, got to know him really well. And by far, in a way, my favorite person and mate that I've met out of cricket is Dale Steyn. He's always sort of, you know, ready to go fishing or ready to go for a surf. I suppose we kind of like the same things as well, so I suppose it would be natural. But just a genuinely nice guy. And, you know, he kind of played cricket the way I liked it. He was a really good oak off the field and a complete psycho on the field. So kind of exact recipe that I would have liked if I could bowl fast.
Well, one thing that has been piquing my interest for a long time, and now that he's retired, I'm gonna give it a shot. Paul, where does the nickname Julio come from?
I'm not actually sure, to be honest with you. I think it came from the fact that he looked. I don't know actually. I know that when he got to the Titans, his nickname was Sunshine. He looked like that guy. He had long blonde hair, a little bit like he has now. Like that guy in that one movie, I forget what it was, where they called him Sunshine. It was an American football movie, I think, where they called that.
And really surfer. And he had a skateboard under his arm, didn't he, most of the time?
Sure. She's sure where Julio came from, actually. That's a pretty good question. I probably should know that. but I don't. I think maybe De Villiers gave it to him. Nah. I've got no idea where that would have come from. But it certainly stuck.
John, you would have had quite a few tussles on the field with Dale. Any memories of standout occasions and just your impression of Dale as a bowler and as a person?
Yeah, I just love how he came to prominence in such a short period of time. Like, Paul played all his cricket with him, and before he joined Paul, you know, Northerns, the Titans, you know, at that time, he'd come off the map. He's come out of nowhere, and he just had raw pace. And the thing is, he had such a great wrist over the years, you know, like that. He just had all the attributes you could ever ask for. And obviously, we had a couple of games. I think Paul was probably there at Centurion the one time. Basically, I think Paul was standing in mid on, and I think I got one on the head, and I was man down there, and I wasn't getting any compliments while I was down there either by Cullinan and Harris. But anyway, you get yourself up and dust yourself off to face another 150 ball. So that wasn't the most enjoyable moment of batting I'd ever say. But what a legend! I love the guy so much. You know, he's just got a smile on his face, and you see his face, and he just lights up when he sees another cricketer. All round great guy and amazing cricketer.
If I may throw a story in about Dell, by the way, talking about sort of world class styles of bowling, it didn't actually happen in a test match. It happened in a 4-day game. We were playing in Bloemfontein against Free State, and at the time it was there was no love lost between the two sides. Two very good teams. Obviously, the Titans are better side than them, clearly. And we kind of wanted to show them, and we were playing away, and Stanky had just come back from a sort of niggle, and he was only allowed to bowl 15 overs. So we get there, and the pitch is really, really green, and we think, okay, well, this is not too bad, and Stanky comes on to bowl, and Lewis Bosman runs down and hits him for 6, I think, over his head, and I think he had a few words. Probably shouldn't have, because that's I was standing at second slip, and I think I was standing just before the boundary edge. He was bowling so quick. I think he got 7 in the first and 8 in the second, and including shattering Jacques Rudolph's hand. I mean, I talk about it to Jacques quite a bit, that spot of bowling. And I think he got a hat-trick as well. He got a hat-trick in the first, I think 8 in the second, or maybe the other way around, 8 and 7, including a hat-trick and breaking poor old Jacques Rudolph's hand. And he was only allowed to bowl 15 overs in innings. So shows you how good Dale Steyn was. And also a lesson to all young opening batsmen that only irritates the fast bowler.
Yes, indeed. Chatting to Pierre Joubert about that game, he was in the slips, and he tells me that Dale was bowling so fast that I think it was Jacques Rudolph who got an edge, and it hit Pierre on his leg. On his shin, and he's actually still got a scar from that blow. So yeah, it was a
excuse the sound. You should speak to Victor Petang about that game as well. I think he was standing just north of square leg.
A wise man, I think. Yeah, Dale, here are my stumps. Have a go. Let's keep this short.
Yeah, just a slight exaggeration from Paul there. It was 14 wickets in the match, not 15. 6 for 69 and 8 for 41.
Ah, there we go. That's why we have Andrew Sampson around. So
it was a hat trick, though.
We don't spread fake news. Yeah, and keeps us accurate. There was a hat trick. Yes, definitely. Yeah. So Dale Steyn, we will miss that wonderfully languid run up the beautifully smooth action and swing at high pace, irresistible stuff, and just a wonderful gentleman and person. As well. So kudos to you, Dale Steyn. Thanks for all the entertainment and the memories. And that'll be the end of this episode for now. We'll be back soon as the domestic season starts kicking off and we build up to the T20 World Cup in the United Arab Emirates. Don't forget to subscribe if you would like to be alerted for when our next podcast is. And you can also follow us on Twitter at @dotballpodcast. Thanks very much for listening, and we look forward to chatting to you again.